You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Did you own the MC Hammer parachute pants when you were a young man?
If you don't believe me, I don't even care. I don't need a picture for it. I like the memory.
Giles Barnes has parachute pants, though. I think they're just catching on in Europe. Two-year-old thing.
So that's like reverse buyer's remorse.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
this is 11th dimension chess right here.
Yeah,
maybe.
Cheated a little bit, yep.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, Channel 85 at MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. It is a late, late Sunday night here in the studios with me, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. And we are here up late for you because I'm going on the road. David Goss is in Mexico, and we just had to get Monday's show in somehow, some way after a wild week of action. Doyle, how you feeling at this late hour on Sunday? Everything, I guess for you, it's tolerable, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's only 8 p.m. here, so I'm ready to get this done, get my Game of Thrones on, and then call it a weekend.
There you have it. My neighbors were on the roof streaming Game of Thrones, so I'm missing out on that. That's what we'll do for you, ETR Nation. A big, big weekend of action to go over, but first, a little housekeeping here. The second segment, you probably saw those renderings that LAFC put out on Friday. Well, we talked to Tom Pinn on Friday as well, and that interview is coming up in the second segment. A lot to go over there, timelines, exactly what's involved in building this thing. What are those special features? You know how that goes. When these things come out, there's all the new bells and whistles, inspiration from previous stadiums, new stadiums, however you want to go about it. LAFC president and co-owner Tom Pinn will help us answer those questions and talk a little bit about what they're doing on the field preparing for 2018 as well. So you want to stick around for that one in the second segment. Some other notes here. If you want to catch up on the weekend, really no better way than the MLS app. So hit that one up. Maybe you're standing in line for breakfast on Monday morning or Tuesday morning as it is whenever this thing is released. Go ahead and use that. All the goals, all the news, all the highlights, it's all there right at your fingertips. One of the things, Doyle, you probably saw this weekend if you were doing that was a little bit of beef between Kai Kamara and Pipa Higuain. Let's walk people through what happened here. This was a wild game in Columbus between the Crew and Montreal. A 4-4 game, but a game that the Crew led 4-1. In the end, we're not talking about the draw, although that is a pretty exciting one if you were watching it. We're talking about two guys at the penalty spot that don't want to give up the ball. Kai
talking
wants
about
it.
The beef.
The beef, man.
It was crazy. It was, I think I saw the word unsavory thrown around. Greg Lawless on our editor's chat during the game was absolutely scandalized.
See, and that's the opposite of beef. So that has me confused. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I mean, look, it's Kai wants to take PKs. He was not happy last year because he missed the golden boot because he didn't really get to take them, although the Crew only took two, I believe, all season long. Mm-hmm. They get one. He steps up. He has the ball. Federico wants the ball. Apparently, Greg Berhalter had given them the mandate of one for one, or that's kind of the rumor from Kai after this. We did not hear from Pipa. Eventually, Pipa gets it, but it's not good.
To me, it's less about the PK thing, because I'm Team Kai on the PK thing. I think Kamara's 6-for-7 in his career. Yes, he did miss against the Impact last year in the playoffs, but he's 6-for-7. He's 1-for-1 this year. And he is the main goal scorer. And look, we ask our goal scorers to be obsessive psychos. There has to be something a little bit unhinged about you in order to be a great goal scorer. So we can't, like, I think it's just weird to say, oh, yeah, you know what? For this part right here, just turn that off. So I don't blame Kamara at all. Higuain is the worst penalty taker, or tied for the worst penalty taker in history, in league history, for guys with 20 or more attempts. He only converts at a 70% rate. Most guys convert 85 or 90% rate. So I'm Team Kai when it comes to that. The real issue is that after the on-field theatrics, he went into the press and he just annihilated Higuain. After he just killed him.
Yeah, he aired some dirty laundry there. And it wasn't just, this game in particular. And in case you didn't notice, Pipa did take this penalty. He finished it with aplomb. Kai had two goals in this game. The other thing is he's going for a hat trick, so it would have been his first, I believe, of his professional career. So he really wanted that, and he was pissed. I mean, you said it. Here's what he said afterwards. Pipa said, "Let Ethan score," and Ethan says, "No, you can have it," in reference to Kamara. This is Kamara retelling here. Then Pipa says, "No, I get to take it." Kamara's take on this, quote, "That's selfishness. that's not a teammate. And then he went on to basically make the case that Pipa doesn't feed him the ball, that he doesn't have to rely on Pipa, that his production doesn't come down to Higuain, saying, you know, maybe one or two assists have come from him. Mostly it's Ethan. Mostly it's the outside backs, the passing of the ball. And then he starts talking about number 10, number 9 relationships in the league that he really likes. He talks about Kaká and Larin. He talks about Piatti and Drogba, two guys he saw up close. And he just, I mean, I'm trying to, he's calling out Pipa for what here? Just not providing him the service he needs? The alternative side of that is the service that he needs is not the kind that Pipa usually delivers. So maybe it's the through balls to the outside mids. Maybe it's to the outside backs. What do you make of that complaint from Pilar?
Well, somebody on Twitter crunched the numbers. Let me see if I could. It's Vision de Jou. It's a French Twitter handle. Crunch the numbers. And of Kamara's 31 goals for the crew, Higuain's only had the primary assist on 3 of them. Finlay's had 6. Waylon Francis has had 5. Then a bunch of guys with 2 or 3, including Higuain. It's 1 out of 10 goals for the number 10 to number 9 combo does seem low. But as you pointed out, that's not how the crew really attack. Higuain, his job is to get the ball to the flankers or the overlapping fullbacks on the run, and they just send in an ungodly number of crosses to Kamara. However, 3 games ago, Higuain played 6 passes to Kamara in the run of play. 2 weeks ago, he played 2. And this past week, he played exactly 1. So maybe Kai's got a little bit of a point.
Maybe so, maybe so. Greg Berhalter was not very happy about going to the media, putting this in the public eye. Here's what he had to say on Sunday. It became a big thing in Columbus, and the Dispatch followed up with an exclusive interview with Berhalter. By the way, they trained on Sunday, a little regen session and then a training session for the guys who didn't play. Berhalter said he did not talk individually with Kamara or Higuain. Kamara did say after this game that he and Pipa had talked. They put it in the past, but obviously he still had a lot to say about it. Here's what Berhalter had to say on Sunday. Quote, "We have a policy where we don't want to be talking about our teammates or the club in press like that. I think it was uncalled for." He was also asked if they'd be looking at discipline for Kamara. He said they gather info, and then that may come down later. Also asked, "Might this mean parting ways with a DP? Pipa and Kai, they're DPs." He did not make a denial, Doyle. He said, "With any player, we care for each and every one of these guys. Decisions like that are never easy. It's something we will consider very carefully. And again, the ultimate factor will be what's in the best interest of this club." There's no denial there. Could it be that something could happen from this?
I think that we are going to see a trade this week from Columbus, and it might not even be one of these two guys. I mean, Tony Chani has been banished to the netherworld from what we've seen. But it's a good test for a young coach, and I personally love that we're starting to see some stuff like this in public. I want drama. Everybody was on Twitter Saturday night talking about this and caring about it, and it's so much more fun and entertaining than the bland, personality-less quotes that we so often see in these post games. Even when you know guys are steaming for one reason or another, it's always just so vanilla. Well, Kai was not vanilla in this one, and I applaud him for it. Look, again, we ask our goal scorers to be absolutely obsessed with putting the ball into the net. And here's a guy who did that to the extent where he had a borderline golden boot season last year. He took the team to the MLS Cup. It scored a goal in MLS Cup. He did everything you could possibly want a number 9 to do last year. And now, because of one outburst, you're thinking about maybe trading him. To me, that would be a little bit crazy. Like, you would have to really believe that nobody can play with this guy anymore to pull the trigger on a deal like that.
Berhalter did say that he thinks the relationship there it can be healed and they can move forward. Asked about the poor start that they've had. They're below the red line, of course. He said, "Hey, look, it's early. Look what the Red Bulls are doing. We're still right in this thing. We've got a chance. Not a good result for Columbus, though. Up 4-1, Montreal come back and grab it. If you haven't watched the highlights of this game, you want to see the stuff with Kai and Pipa. But man, Ignacio Piatti just keeps scoring golazos. So go check that one out as well. Some good stuff here. Game-tying goal from Dominic Oduro certainly had him happy in his return to Columbus as well.
He and Kai had a piece of pizza afterwards.
Did they?
Yeah, and they tweeted out the picture.
Wow.
It was such a great post.
That's straight out of the Dom Oduro handbook. Congratulations to him on that one. Let's keep talking about a couple teams that are in some trouble, and then we'll get to the teams that are riding high. Those teams include L.A., the Rapids, Toronto FC. Jordan Morris is riding high. But Sporting Kansas City, they go to Houston, a Houston team that we've talked about their struggles repeatedly here. Houston gets off the mark. They get a 2-0 win. Kubo Torres gets his first really significant contribution in Dynamo colors. Andrew Wenger, baby, get the hype train started again. But what's going on in Kansas City? Why can't they seem to get a result? It's been, I think, 6 games without a win so far.
Yeah, I mean they are just in either a rut or a death spiral right now, and I'm not sure which it is. They're not getting a lot out of Dom Dwyer. First and foremost, which is tough because so much of what they do has to run through him because he's the only natural goal scorer out there.
Yep.
But if you look at his passing maps, he's not connecting with anybody, whether it's Benny Failhaber or Roger Espinoza or any of the wingers. And when you don't have that fulcrum anchoring the opposing back line, then they're a little bit free to go and put pressure on the rest of the attackers. Which just absolutely kills their rhythm. On the other side of the field, I mean, the Wenger goal was shot out of a cannon. And the Giles Barnes goal was just another case of the back line. They're asleep at the wheel, Weebs. Yep. Any time they get into the final third, their own defensive third, they are just – their reactions are so slow and they are just – they don't work together. And so these pockets open up, and teams are just ruthless about exploiting them.
Peter Vermees called out his team after this one. He really did. He kind of waded in, and he said, hey, it's on us. We keep making the same mistakes over and over again, the same stuff. And he called a couple players out, not by name, but he basically said there were 3 or 4 guys out there that just weren't doing it, aren't getting it done. And you look at the lineup they put out there, it's by and large first-choice guys. It's guys that you don't look at and say, oh, yeah, he's probably talking about him. Who's he talking about here?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is Dwyer. Maybe it is Failhaber. Maybe it's Matt Beisler. Nobody for Sporting has covered themselves in glory this season. I don't think anybody is safe for next week. I don't think there's anybody whose name is in ink in the starting 11, because Sporting have really been that bad.
Yeah, they dominated possession in this one, did not really create many chances out of that possession, as you said there, Doyle. Look, still 4-5-2, still in the playoff field. It's very, very early, but they have not won in 6, just 2 draws over that span after 4 wins in their first 5. That had us talking. Maybe supporters shield for them, but that certainly has fallen off. That's kind of MLS in a nutshell for you. One more struggling team before we get to the good stuff, and we'll kind of combine this here. The Rebs, once again getting a loss. We knew going to LA that it was not going to be easy for them. They are now winless in 6. But the Galaxy with a 4-2 win here. Robbie Keane is back. He's doing his thing. He had 2 goals. Jesse Zardes played well. Giovanni Dos Santos had, I don't know if you can really argue, probably the goal of the weekend, although I think Piatti has a shout on him there. What's up with the Rebs? Do they need to make a move? I mean, it feels like a lot of teams are entering the point where they need to be setting themselves up for the summer and freshening things up or trying something to turn things around.
I think they have to make a move for another central defender. I think that while Andrew Farrell may eventually own that spot, he's certainly not there as of yet, and they've given it a solid 16 months at this point to confirm as much. And it's not just that he hasn't been particularly adept as a central defender. It's that they're getting absolutely torched out wide. So they need someone who could be a lockdown fullback, which is what Andrew Farrell mostly was in 2013 and 14. So I do think that it's a personnel issue with the Revs. I do think it's a luck issue as well. I mean,
yeah, that crossbar got him again this
second,
week, huh?
Yeah, second week in a row. I think the 5th time all year. So they have been snake bit, but at some point you have to stop and not you can't wait for things to straighten themselves out. You have to be proactive, and you got to make a move. And I think it's come to that for the Revs.
Not much doing for them in the first half on the attacking side. They were down 3-0 going into halftime. And then Jay Heaps lit into them a little bit. They come out in the second half. They get it down to 3-2. Juan Agudelo with a nice little goal for him. Kellen Rowe with a bomb from deep right after a no-call on a penalty that I think anybody watching that game, anybody in the stadium, most of the guys on the field figured was a handball and a PK. Didn't happen. Seconds later, Kellen Rowe bangs it in from deep. That's just kind of what he does. But you had an interesting video on the site, and people should go check that out, about Giovanni Dos Santos and Robbie Keane, because this is the first time we've seen them together since, I believe, March 19th. Keane out for 5 games. He recovered from that knee injury. So he gets 2 goals. Jesse Zardes has a really nice game, a couple of assists for him. Gio gets the volley. It's all going well. Steven Gerrard with the goal at the end, although there were some really, really nervous moments for them in the second half. I think overall Bruce Arena would hit it on the head when he said, look, we didn't play that well. We had some good moments, but overall there's some things to work on. You're still not buying the Gio and Keane combo. How did they play in this game? How did they fit them?
Well, I think they ended up playing one of their better games together, but that's probably because they weren't forced to work together. They didn't. Keane completed one pass to Dos Santos, and Dos Santos completed one pass to Keane. Now, that's not the entirety of what it means to be working together on the field as attacking partners, but it's a big part of it.
Yeah.
These guys, even against a team like the Revs, who really do invite you forward into the final third and invite you to combine around the box and have this bend-don't-break attitude, Keane and Dos Santos really weren't on the same page. And I wonder if the Revs aren't really equipped to exploit that because of the style they play. It's all in the attacking third or all in the defensive third. There's nothing in the middle. A team that does a little bit more to play through the middle can maybe pull one of those two guys deeper, force them to defend a little bit and get disconnected even more so. And if that's what happened, well, that's what was happening in the first 6 weeks of the season. And it is something that one way or another, Bruce Arena is going to have to guard against.
Look, that attack is going, though. You can't deny that. 22 goals so far. They are at the top of the MLS goal scoring charts by far. Gio on fire for the last 4 or 5 games. Same thing with Zardes. If they can add Keane to that mix, this is a potent team, but you said it. That mix is not that easy. There's not some tried and true recipe that Bruce can go to here. So he's got some things to figure out. But a big win for the LA Galaxy. They got a big Wednesday match against the Philadelphia Union. That one's going to be really, really interesting. The Union with a bye this week, and they will be rested. That's a East-West clash that you're going to want to keep an eye on. That one on Wednesday night. Once again, MLS Live. Go and check that one out. LA, though, second in the Western Conference. You know who's first? That team that we didn't want to even talk about the possibility of them making the playoffs. I mean, we refused to even entertain this a couple weeks ago, and now the Rapids are first in the West. They're tops in the Supporter Shield race. Jermaine Jones is the best number 9 in the league. I mean, this is this is a special story in MLS this season, and we got a bunch of tweets. We got a bunch of emails saying, hey, what's up? When are you guys going to make us number 1 in the power rankings? Give us the respect we deserve. All respect to the Revs. Because, sorry, the Revs, the Rapids, man. I don't know. Yeah, hey. Sorry.
You can't even bring yourself to say it.
I know. Sorry, Revs fans. Apologies, Rapids fans. Apologies all around. They might be the best team in the league right now. Am I right?
On points per game. On points per game, they're at, you know, them and the Galaxy are each at 2 points per game. They have the second best goal differential in the league at +5 behind the Galaxy. They're perfect at home. 5-0-0 at home, where they've beaten the Galaxy. They've beaten Toronto FC, who I think are the other team that are really in contention here. And, you know, as you said, Jermaine Jones he's got 3 goals and 2 assists in 4 games.
I mean, in this
he's the Rocky Mountain Raquelli.
Yeah, and this finish was, I mean, it was casual.
Yeah,
and it was
the run was so good.
Yeah,
you know, Jermaine Jones has come in for a lot of criticism over the years for his directionless running. It was the big knock on him in Germany, and I think it remains the big knock on him with the national team. But since playing this number 10 role for the Rapids, he has a direction. It's towards goal,
yep.
And they are finding him, and he is absolutely ruthless. And it's This is the great young number 10 we've all been waiting for.
And I honestly don't know how surprised we should be. If you look at Germain, he's both infuriating and, you know, one of the best players in the league to watch. But you have to hit him when he's A, healthy, which is not all the time, but he certainly is right now, and B, motivated. And that motivated side is not always universal with Germain. You can kind of see him sometimes ebb and flow and get a little bit distracted by things and let out things outside the game get to him. But in some ways, him having this whole, you know, whatever you want to call it with New England, with the contract and the suspension and everything else, it lit a fire under him. And when he's playing like this, and when he's challenged and motivated, and when he thinks people have counted him out, he might be top five player in the league. I mean, I don't think that that's a stretch at this point. The way he changes teams, the way he's now producing like this, the challenge for Colorado, I think, is how long can they keep that going? Right now, Rapids fans, props to you. Enjoy this. 5 wins at home in 5 games, exactly what the doctor ordered from a club standpoint, a business standpoint, a culture standpoint around your club. And, oh, hey, you're going to get Tim Howard in the summer. So that should be pretty fun as well. A new thing came into the league as well this weekend in Toronto, new BMO. This is a great venue, Doyle. I mean, I stuck around to watch the beginning of this game just to see everything going on before I headed out on Saturday night. To get the win there, that was huge. But this is a cathedral. This is going to be a special place, I think, in 2016 for sure as this team rises, but for many, many years down the road.
Yeah, I mean, you could almost feel the stadium shaking through the television broadcast. And it recaptured some of the magic from 2007 when Toronto FC first came into the league and had such a spectacular crowd until, a series of inept front offices just beat that out of them.
Reality set in? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it was nice to see a fan base kind of reborn. And the atmosphere is just from that first game. It's right up there with anything we've seen from the Cascadia teams and anything that we've seen from, you know, full houses in Kansas City or New York. And it's, honest to God, it's what the fans in Toronto deserve because they suffered for so long before this current era with a team that has finally been put together correctly.
Yeah, you look at this roster and you look at what Bezpachenko has been able to do and how they've kind of built and built and made sure they made the right moves and weren't in too much of a hurry. This is going to be one of those, I think, at the end of the season, if they win the Supporters' Shield, we're going to go back and really examine the job that they've done building this roster and making sure that they got it right. It's been really, really impressive. Subasa. I know. It's late. It's like midnight on the East Coast. I'm pushing through here. Indo with his first goal. A great moment for the kid, a big moment for them. They could have had more than one. They probably should have had more than one. FC Dallas's misery on the road continues. But speaking of Cascadia, all 3 Cascadia teams are below the red line after 10 weeks, which is kind of crazy based on who are on these rosters and the level of success they've enjoyed over the last couple of years. But Jordan Morris in Seattle, they got the big win this weekend, and he scores again. I know it was a late goal. I know that the Clint Dempsey goal from Freiburg was way better. But he's got 4 in 4 games. I thought I smoked Simon Borg in the discuss we had on the site between Christian Pulisic and Morris, but Morris is starting to make his case. He's doing something special. This could be a Pantheon rookie season, I think.
Yeah, I think the special thing will be if he makes this not special, if he makes this routine. And he started to do that. He's popping up into better spots, and he's making better decisions, and you could actually see that He's become a lot more comfortable with his back to goal, holding the ball up and linking guys as well. So he's put in the work. But part of this, you got to say, part of this is that Seattle have gone back to something of a 4-4-2. He is playing as a more of a center forward now than he was early in the season when he was on the wing and clearly very uncomfortable. I don't know what this means going forward because as good as he's proving to be as a goal scorer and a field stretcher, and as much as he has improved with that hold up play, if the Sounders are going to play a 4-3-3, starting next month or whenever, I still don't know if he does enough in terms of passing the ball to make that viable. I mean, think about the guys who play that number 9 position, guys like Drogba or Kamara or Fernando Adi, CJ Sapong, guys who really, really, really take a beating and can still hold on to the ball and still make a difference with their passing. And I think that's still what Jordan Morris has to work on.
Still early days for Morris, though. It's nice to see a U.S. national team prospect and a guy, I got to say, you're probably going to see this summer in Copa America doing something special with the Sounders. Now, San Jose is a little bit upset about this result. They thought they played better than the scoreline showed, but a 2-0 win for Seattle. Poor one out for Jake Gleason, though. The Portland Timbers backup goalkeeper was basically, I mean, he was like a freak of nature last week. He made three or four saves that you don't see made every week around the world, and then this week, not so good. Portland heads to Vancouver. They lose 2-1. Gleason with the two balls that he probably should have saved probably giving him a little bit of a gift there, but a 2-1 loss for the Timbers. Also on Sunday night, we didn't mention it, NYCFC just knocked off DC United 2-0. Really a poor performance from DC. Patty Nyarko leaving early in this game, but didn't have much going for David Villa. Kyrie Shelton get the goals for NYCFC. Their first winning streak of 2016. And Doyle, I just want to point out that after you said they had a 0% chance of going to the playoffs, they've won two in a row. What do you have to say about that?
Sticking by it. I mean, a home win over a struggling Vancouver team and then beating a kind of a listless DC United team that's already dropped three games at home now. I'm not seeing it with NYCFC.
Boy, cold water. Cold water. Let us know what you think about the Kai Pipa beef here. Anything from the weekend, we want to hear about it. At Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com if email is your thing. We come back. Tom Pinn of LAFC. Stick with us.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Josie Altador from the U.S. National Team, and you're listening to MLS Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Wiebe, Matt Doyle. It is Sunday night. You're probably listening on Monday morning. Happy to be with you at this late hour, though. White Lung bringing us in. Good stuff. Good new album from them. Go check it out. We are going to be joined by Tom Pinn in just a second. He is the co-owner and president of LAFC. They had some big news, Doyle. Big news on Friday on the stadium front. They got the go-ahead from the LA City Council. This is all going down. Their 22,000-seat venue in South LA. It's going up, man, and it looks really, really cool. The renderings are out. Go check them out. We've got them at MLSsoccer.com. And when you saw those things, what did you think? I know it's not built yet, and I know we're trained to say, hey, I'll believe it when I see this thing rise from the ground. But it looks great, and it looks like a venue that's gonna be kind of a, you know, it's going to make a great footprint in L.A.
Weeby, I said I'll believe it when I see it. That's what I said. We're trained to say that for a reason. It took me 15 years to see a stadium built in Harrison, New Jersey. How long is it going to take to see this stadium built in this beautiful location right in downtown LA? I'm still the eternal skeptic. I will believe it when I see it. The renderings look amazing. The location is among the best in the league, but I need to see that shovel hit dirt.
There's no doubt about it. They say they will start this summer on construction. LAFC does. They also say that it will be built by 2018, their expansion season. All right, let's bring on now Tom Pinn, the president and co-owner of LAFC. You might remember about a year and a half ago, we talked to Tom as this thing was getting going. Well, it's definitely going now. Tom, how's it going?
Great. Been a great run here, a great 18 months, and we're super excited about all the progress in Los Angeles.
Of course, another bit of news today, big news, in fact. The city council, the city, the local government giving you guys the go-ahead on this huge stadium project. I believe $250 million of your investment, the club's investment here, 22,000-seat venue. It's all happening. Give me a rundown. What's the news today? What does it mean for the club?
Yes, we got unanimous approval of the Los Angeles City Council to go forward with the project. In California, it's very complicated to build a building of this kind of stature. There hasn't been an outdoor stadium built in the city of Los Angeles since Dodger Stadium 50-plus years ago.
Whoa,
think about it.
That's incredible.
So getting this approval was awesome. particularly when you factor in where this thing is. It's in the heart of Los Angeles. It's on the site of the old L.A. Sports Arena basketball venue will come down. It's 15 acres. When you look at the aerial shot, it's shaped like a boot. We call it the boot. And it's right next to the front door of the Coliseum, the L.A. Memorial Coliseum. So this is precious real estate in Los Angeles, as I say, in the heart of the city. And it's also in an area called Exposition Park, where there's the Science Center Museum and the Space Shuttle Endeavor, the Natural History Museum, and really cool dinosaurs. And as I say, the Coliseum, you've got all these civic assets, the African American Museum. There's just, it's great stuff. It's an unbelievable place to be, and we're just thrilled about it.
So this is, if folks don't know, this is South L.A., correct? And I heard some comments from the councilman who's in that area who represents those folks, and he sounded really, really excited. What sort of reaction have you got from people? I'm sure you've made your way around the neighborhood, done some selling yourself on this project. What are people saying to you, the folks that are going to be there coming to this stadium supporting this team?
Yeah, well, it's in the core, like right at the heart of the of the urban core, right? So it's on a light rail line, and it's within 2 miles of, say, the center of downtown. So we really like to embrace the city with our structure and our design. We've got two corridors directly back to the downtown skyline. It's really cool. To your point about the neighborhood and the neighbors, you know, redevelopment is sometimes controversial. Not at this time. We had zero public opposition. Zero. We went through, I don't know how many public hearings, including the city council, and not one person ever spoke against it, which is absolutely amazing. And it just shows that people embrace and love the idea of the world's game in the world city. That's our whole motto, is to unite the world city through the world's game. This place is so diverse. Really, you don't know till you live here. But the ethnic backgrounds, it's really people from all over the world. New York's a melting pot. You sort of become a New Yorker. California, it's free to be what you want to be, right? The American dream, and we're more like a mosaic. So the one connector is the love of soccer, and there's so much attention and enthusiasm about where the game is going. So it's really fun to be representing new and next version of the world's game in the world city.
So I look at your ownership group and I'm thinking the same thing. 27 strong, it's a mosaic as well. When you guys got together to look at this, to decide how to design this stadium, by the way, I'm looking at the renderings right now. You got that beautiful view through the corner of downtown LA. This roof looks special. You got the big stand on the side. Walk me through your inspiration. What were the must-haves? When you sat down with Gensler, that's your architectural firm, what were you saying? We have to have this, we need that. What was it about?
Yeah, the first idea was to be truly urban and of the city. So we wanted to embrace the city. You talk about the view corridor you'll see in the rendering. But also part of being urban is being sort of dense and on top of the action. So unlike the most recent, a lot of the soccer stadiums that are built where the energy flows out, it's sprawling, we challenged Gensler to push it and push everything as close to the pitch as possible. So the stands are like the minimal distance from the sidelines and the end lines with the steepest rake possible of the stands. So everything goes up and over and on the pitch. And then those roof lines you talk about are acoustically designed to keep the energy and the sound in. So we see it as a noise box, a competitive advantage. But, you know, I grew up as a soccer fan in Portland. I'm the enlightened new guy who experienced what the Timbers Army does and that the way the Timbers have brought that community together. So we wanted to create that kind of superstructure to give that kind of environment. And now we're building our supporter group. We're building our fan base. A lot of season tickets and deposits are coming in. It's really been amazing. Our supporter groups are uniting. And, you know, we're a little under 2 years out, but the thing's on fire. It's been great.
So the supporters, obviously, they're going to want to know where they're sitting. Do you have any idea yet? Do you know where that's going to be? I mean, I look around, and obviously the Timbers Army have their have their perch there at the end of the field, and you look in Kansas City, and they have a nice club that they're able to have fun in before and after games or during games. What can the supporters expect in this stadium?
Same thing, but better here. We're designing a supporter section in the north end, so towards downtown, that is the steepest rake possible, right on top of the action, and at the top of that will be a sky bar for the supporters. Their club in the sky with a view of downtown and a view into the pitch.
Whoa.
That's just for them. And then that's about 4,000 fans along with another deck above it that comes out and cantilevers over the section like a Thunderdome kind of thing. So the physical structure will be there for them. We've engaged the supporters in every aspect of design from the beginning. So they've had a loud voice. We've heard them. We continue to hear them as we go into now putting the frosting on the cake, so to speak, as we, you know, really fit out all those areas.
That's that sounds incredible. The Thunderdome here at the boot. That's pretty sweet. I'm looking at that kind of crop off on these renderings here, and it looks like an incredible facility for you guys. But what the release here says is that there's going to be a soccer museum in there. And I know from my time in Brazil, the Estadio Pacaembu in Sao Paulo, they've got the same thing going on there. I'm curious about your vision for that. What's in there? Where is that stuff going to come from? What's going to be so special about that museum?
Yeah, so at the moment, we're not going to build just a venue for soccer games for 20 games out of the year. That doesn't pencil out or make sense. I told you, we're in Exposition Park, so there's 6 million visitors to the park every day. So we want to be complimentary to them, and we're doing a food experience and a killer retail store that's going to be the world's game sort of store. Big spaces. We're designing all that right now. A conference and event center space. I mean, it's cool to have your corporate meeting or your wedding at a soccer venue. It's better than going into a hotel. Our food service will be better. And then our entitlement also gives us the ability to build a soccer museum. We've wanted to celebrate the world's game, the history of it. You know, we don't have history of our own. We're all about the future. But the history of the game and its expression in Los Angeles is really appealing to us and will be a big part of everything we do.
Sounds like some special stuff going down. You mentioned the fans, the groups coming together. What's that process been like? What are we looking at? What sorts of, you know, give me an insight into the type of people that are supporting this club, that are getting behind you, that are saying LAFC is going to be my club.
It's so cool. It's really a mix of what you think about with Los Angeles. We've got various ethnic backgrounds. We've got supporter groups that support teams over in England, let's say, in the EPL. You've got folks that are a cool group of Southwest Airlines baggage handlers. These guys are awesome.
Oh,
they name themselves LAFC Relentless. And they're like exactly what you want as a core group. We've had some of the great groups, the real fans from Chivas, come join us, the Black Army, the Ultras. Those guys are still pledged to their support of us. And the challenge for us now is to bring all these groups together and unite them in one space with one voice. And the leadership of each of those groups and more that I've mentioned are totally open to it and have that process is well underway. We see these guys as co-founders in every way. They, you know, nowhere else can someone have a voice in absolutely everything we've done, including our crest. You know, we launched the crest back in January, and it's been really, really well received. We're so proud of it because it represents L.A. Well, our supporters, those core groups, had a voice in the colors, in the look of the crest. You know, they gave their stamp of approval, and now they're wearing it with pride.
They certainly are. I see that hat everywhere. Some folks came in our office a couple days ago, some of your marketing folks, and people were practically begging for this thing. We see Justin Bieber wearing it. I mean, it's got an iconic look. And it's, to me, I look at that and I think, that's some genius marketing. I mean, that's LA Dodgers lid times two, just updated here. Was that intentional? Did you guys know, hey, we're going to put out a hat here that you're going to see everywhere?
It was. Yeah, it was really intentional. You know, Peter Guber, our executive chairman, is one of the owners of the Dodgers. and a couple of our other owners or executives at the Dodgers, we're well aware of how they've created that expression of L.A. that, that people want and are proud to wear. So we were looking to emulate that with the hat, the cap. You know, there really isn't an iconic cap out there in the in global soccer. And we know we have the opportunity to do that. That baseball cap is an American innovation, right? It's, and the snapback trend that's out there, we've got this ability to be a bit of a fashion brand, a statement about what L.A. is. And that's why we selected gold and black as our core colors. It's unique on the soccer landscape, and it really represents the texture of the urban core and then the splash and sizzle of greater Los Angeles.
So on this show, we had a good conversation with the guy in Germany who works for Adidas who does the jerseys, and he's telling us about the timelines. I got to imagine you guys are either right in the thick of that for your first jerseys or they're already done. I'm going to ask you for a hint. I'm not asking you to give it away, but I want to know just something to get me excited about these kits that I'm sure are going to be coming out very, very soon, or at least certainly before 2018.
Yeah, so we aren't anywhere near the finish line on that. In fact, we haven't started the official process. However, we've seen any number of designs, and these color combinations are just so hot, you know. Gold and black and asphalt is one of our colors, and you get into we're in the heart of the city, so we like red as an accent and as a third color. When you put these things together, it's really, really hot. All the prototypical stuff I've seen, you know, from a design standpoint, just gives me the tingles every time I see it. It's going to be cool.
It certainly is. People very excited for this all over the U.S., certainly in Los Angeles. Before I let you go, Tom, I got to ask you about the on-the-field stuff. We've talked about where the team's going to play. Do you have any thoughts on where the team might train? We've seen Atlanta United throw out some plans for what is an incredible training facility. Anything in the works on that side?
Yes, we're working on that. We're working on things big and small. It'll be special no matter what it is, because that's a key component of being a world-class club, is having good facilities. You know, land is precious out here mm-hmm. and difficult to get in greater Los Angeles. The sprawl is amazing. You know, the miles and miles of urban sprawl here is just breathtaking, and the power of this market, the wealth of this market. So finding enough real estate for enough pitches is a bit of a challenge, but we're making nice progress in that. We're in some active dialogue with some really exciting potential opportunities, and more on that to come, details to come.
We will wait those. Of course, John Thorington's ahead here on the technical side for you guys. He's figuring out how you're going to put a winning team on the field. Have you figured out in any way what your identity as a club is going to be on the field? I mean, off the field, it sounds like you guys are in great position. You're pushing forward. You got the stadium. You've got kind of the identity around yourselves. Have you really honed in yet on what you want to be as a club? Maybe even a coach that you might want to hire for this club?
Yeah, we have. I mean, John talks about wanting to be authentically representative of the city. You know, the way that the Pittsburgh Steelers just sort of mean Pittsburgh, right? And, you know, his other sports teams, he really likes the idea of thematically creating it so that it represents the city. And what's the city about? It's about diversity. It's about creativity. It's about being next and new and forward. He wants to play on the front foot. He wants to, you know, have players that represent all those ideals we just talked about. And it actually helps when we put them through that filter as we're looking at things. I will tell you this. The most important thing with our stadium is we wanted something that's worthy of any player in the world. And I mean any player would be proud to call this their home. So we look forward to getting into those discussions soon with agents, with players about co-founding this team, the on-the-field version, from the beginning.
Come on, though. You got to have guys hitting you up already, right? People are leaving you messages. They're giving you cards. You don't have agents or coaches already giving you calls?
The phone has been ringing, yes. And we're, you know, looking forward to talking to everybody.
We will wait and see what happens there. Just one more for you here. The Academy is something a lot of people want to know about, and we've seen from the Galaxy that there is plenty of talent in L.A. That's no mystery to anyone. I've seen your U-12s in action. That's fun to see. I've also heard word of perhaps an Academy for girls on your side. What is going on with the Academy? Where is it going, and what's the vision there?
Yes, we have started our U-12 team. Pretty good little dudes, I'll tell you that. And we were very interested in the girls' market as well, or the girls' opportunities as well. And we got an owner on our squad named Mia Hamm, who was particularly interested in that. And soccer is such an exploding sport, and it's so important in this region in particular with the weather. You know, it's just perfect out all the time. It's perfect for soccer. So we plan to have a robust and active academy. We plan to compete head up with the Galaxy at all levels when we get the chance to. You know, they're a formidable and such a well-run organization. They're great partners in the MLS, but make no mistake, once we get on the pitch, we'll be nose-to-nose and looking forward to really getting after it.
Step one, getting that stadium built. They've got the approval. LAFC, the city council, giving them the go-ahead. 22,000 seats. You heard it from Tom Pinn. This is going to be a special place for the sport in South L.A. 2018 is the date. That's when they're coming in. Tom, we thank you so much for your time, man. Enjoy it. This is awesome stuff.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email ExtraTime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at ExtraTime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Alejandro Bedoya from the U.S. National Team, and you're listening to ExtraTime Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, into the mailbag, finishing this thing off. Hope you're enjoying your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever it might be. I am Andrew Wiebe with me. As always, Matt Doyle. Let's hit this mail here. We'll start with Nicholas, who emails in on Mother's Day. Guys, when I was 10, I was on my way to a soccer game with my mom, and suddenly I realized I'd forgotten one of my shin pads. I started freaking out because I could not afford to miss a minute of the game, which started in 45 minutes. Mom drops him off, goes shopping for shin pads. Long story short, she goes to three different stores, finally founds them, takes them back. Turns out his pads were in the other pocket of his bag, and he didn't even need them. When he told her, she said, hey, that's okay. Now I have one of these as a backup pair in my car that reminds me of sometimes in my childhood missing things, and God knows your mom is always going to make it right. Happy Mother's Day to all you moms out there that do what you got to do to make sure kids get on the field, make sure kids get to school, make sure kids are kids. Much appreciated. I know I talked to my mom. Hopefully you did too, Doyle. Soccer moms, were you a soccer playing little kitty, or was that not your deal back in the day in Connecticut?
No, I was baseball and basketball growing up, but it's all the same in terms of the, you know, the way parents behave, and I don't have quite an analogous story to our friend Nicholas there, but stuff that's close enough. You know, shin pads or no, it definitely rings a bell.
I do remember a time when Mama Weeby went to get me a cup. I played catcher. I forgot my cup. I did not want to play catcher without that cup. She went and made sure she got something to help protect the boys, let's say. So thank you, Mama Weeby, on that. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. Any more stories about your moms and how they've affected your life or your life in soccer? Still, we want to hear them. We want to hear them. Glenn in Mannheim emailing in. Guys, I just read an article about the budding partnership between Stoke City and Orlando City SC. Stoke's highest goal grabber this season had 12, and their goal differential was 15. What are the chances we could see Kyle Larin cross the pond for the Premiership? Matt, do you think he's an EPL-level player? Is that maybe in his future?
I think he can get there, yeah. But I think if you look at the history of MLS, there hasn't been a ton of success for guys going directly from the league to the EPL, especially for attackers. Now, maybe that's starting to change a little bit, at least for defenders, with the success of Jeff Cameron and DeAndre Yedlin over the last couple of years. But I'm a big proponent of guys who leave one continent sort of heading into a starter league, we'll call it, maybe a Portugal or the Eredivisie or, you know, maybe even France, something like that. I think that would help Laren adjust culturally before going eventually into the spotlight of the EPL. But does he have the talent? Absolutely. I think he does.
Yeah, had a great season so far. RJ Clark emails in, guys, after all the publicity and hype about him coming and having only played 10 games in two seasons, will Frank Lampard go down as one of the worst DP signings in MLS history? As it stands right now, Doyle, I don't think that's really in doubt. If in fact he does not get on the field very much this season, for sure. Now, if he can get on the field and lead NYCFC to a playoff spot, that could change, but it's not started well here.
No, I mean, I think he has that number one spot. I think it was Rafa Márquez who cost the Red Bulls twice in a row in the playoffs. But look, NYCFC was supposed to be Lampard's team, and they didn't sniff the playoffs last year. And I still have my guarantee that they won't this year either.
You still do. We're still waiting for word on Frank Lampard. It did appear that he was at least at training last week, not doing a ton, but there and maybe on his way back. We're still waiting to see. Patrick Vieira is still trying to figure out that midfield, although they do have two wins in a row. Just trying to spite Doyle. That's all we have here. Tom Penn of LAFC, we thank him for his time. Doyle, thank you for staying up somewhat late with me. With that, we'll see you on Thursday.